Well, I tend to think of the Gosling as a poem. The critical opening phrase of this poem will always be the grip, which the hands unite to form a single unit. Slowly and slowly, the club head is led back, pulled into position, not by the hands, but by the body, which turns away from the target, shifting weight to the right side without shifting balance. Tempo is everything, perfection unattainable. As the body coils now to the top of the swing, there's a slight hesitation, a nod to the gods. Now the weight begins shifting back to the left, pulled by the powers inside the earth. It's alive, this swing, a living sculpture, and down through contact, always down, striking the ball crisply, with character. There's only one other acceptable theory about how to hit a golf ball.
Oh, boy. Well, what's the other theory?
Grip it and rip it.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
Good morning and welcome to the Sports Hub Golf Club. Hardy here with you. You may have heard Mr. Big Voice Guy saying just a few minutes ago, I'm going to be out at the Dixon Danvers today. Kristen tells me it's at the Liberty Tree Mall, which I've been to, but I've never been to that Dick's before. Oh, but we're going to change all that today. It's a big outdoor tour event they're doing. So not golf related for my little outing today, but outdoorsy nonetheless. And I guess they've got like a paddle pool set up and like a demo pool for kayaks and paddle boards and a track set up so you can demo bikes. It's an outdoor tour they're doing up and down the East Coast. I'll be out there from 11 to 1 today at the Dick's in Danvers. So that's number one. Number two, John Deere Classic going on right now. And we went down a bit of a rabbit hole yesterday, Beetle and I, as we were I was filling in for Zoe. Maybe you heard all this week. And Beetle and I were sitting there talking about doing it was during one of the headlines. And Beetle and I were kind of like bouncing back and forth on the headlines, taking turns. And he said a name that I missed the first time and people started goofing on him. And I went down a mini mental rabbit hole when it comes to the leader after two rounds at the John Deere Classic. A guy by the name of, whom I've always referred to as Jonathan Vegas. Beetle went to say his name, and I believe he said Jay Honiton Vegas. And people started goofing. I'm like, what are you doing? What's up? You don't know the name Jonathan? And then I really looked at it for the first time. It's J-H-O-N-A-T-T-A-N. But as I went through and further research, now that was just a mini mental rabbit hole yesterday in the moment. But as I went through and looked it up and actually researched it a little bit last night, everyone says Jonathan, from Jim Nantz to Johnny Miller to, you know, any announcer I could find, they all call him John or just Vegas, or they do something I would do, which is create a not so cute and clever nickname on the spot and start calling him Johnny Vegas. So now I don't know. Now I'm like Charlie Brown sitting like on the floor of my bedroom not knowing what shoe to put on first because I don't know if it's lucky or unlucky because I think I've got a routine, but I've never won. I'm going to go with Jonathan Vegas, 13 under par after a 62 yesterday at TPC Deer Run in Illinois. Now, John Deere Classic, famous or infamous for being the last tournament before the British Open. And with the PGA Tour change, that has not changed. John Deere Classic is still the last tournament that gets played before the British Open. And they've done different things over the years to get players to attend, one of them being the chartering of a jumbo jet. So anybody who shows up and plays, and if you make the cut, or if you want to stick around for the weekend, whatever their stipulations are, you get a free trip over to wherever the Open is being played. Which doesn't sound like a big deal, but up until, and maybe even still, I think it is still a consideration for a lot of these guys who are out there barely on the tour. You know, they're not winning or making a lot of top tens to make a lot of money. They've got some sponsorship money, but again, that money dries up quickly. This is not like other sports where you can just assume you're going to be making your game check week in and week out, and we don't have to worry about money and how much it's going to, you know, I'll just pick a player down here, Joey Garber, right? Right now on the PGA Tour money list, he's 158th. He's earned $443,000. So for him to book at the last minute, you know, if he, you know, is playing in the British, or if he's, if he wants to, you know, take his family over, all right, the guy's making 400 grand a year, but he's also paying a lot of his own travel expenses, and it's different kind of money for these guys to have to take their whole family over and play overseas and all that stuff, and your sponsors are only going to do so much. So, you know, that chartered plane flight, at least it used to mean something to these guys. A little bit further down the leaderboard here, Andrew Landry, Lucas Glover, they are both one and two strokes back, respectively. And then one of my favorite players on tour, Harold Varner III. This is the guy that we spoke with out at the Dell Technologies Championship and the Deutsche Bank Championship. He sat down with us before. I think Ryan Johnston and I got a chance to talk to him one year. I hosted a player panel once with him, and it was the year that I believe Henrik Stenson was there also. Just a really, really nice, honest, and I would say, like, I wouldn't go so far as to say charming, but he's got a certain way about him where even in a very relaxed mode, he has a tendency to win people over. He's just a favorite. He's just a favorite of the PGA Tour media people. Reporters who have talked to him, met him, the fans absolutely love him. And he is differentiated. He will be the first to say it by, you know, the fact that he is one of the only players of color on the tour right now. But it has nothing to do with, obviously, his game. And really, I think he would love to become known at the point as not just, you know, one of the best young African-American players on tour and just one of the best young players on tour, which is a title that he's deserving of right now. He's in the top 100 on the money. He's made almost $1 million this year just in prize money. And he has himself in a tie for fourth right now at the John Deere Classic. So be rooting for him over the weekend as these guys get ready for the British Open, which begins next week. To that end, our intern during the week, Cam, was, I don't know if he was watching the Golf Channel, if he just stumbled upon this himself, but you want to listen to somebody who is very excited about the British Open next week. Listen to what David Faraday has to say about the course and the fact that it's coming to Northern Ireland.
Really a spectacular event. I'd be very surprised if one of the Northern Irish guys doesn't get into contention, you know, specifically Rory McIlroy. It's an exquisite golf course. The visitors and members have been playing off of mats for the best part of the last year. There isn't a divot in sight. It's like velvet. Rough there is mind-bending. The atmosphere will be crackling, and they're just so starved over there of world-class golf. I mean, this is the biggest sporting event that's ever been held on the island. You know, so I mean, it's difficult for me to so describe cool. just how, you know, excited people are. I'm, you know, I got the hair standing up on the back of my neck just thinking about it. You know, I can't wait for it. I'm very proud of it.
Biggest sporting event that's ever been held on the island. That is David Faraday talking about the British Open, which will be contested, Northern Ireland, Royal Portrush, starting next week. Now, Faraday said a couple of things in there. Obviously, the course conditions, they're going to do everything they can to make them perfect. And the people who actually play there, and maybe you've experienced this too, when you go to a course where, I'll give you an example of a course that probably a lot of us had played at one time or another, Newton Commonwealth. And I believe it is the third hole that is a par three, where it's not that the tee box seems to always be under repair and they have to do this. No, just as a practice, at least until the last time I played it, they use an artificial mat for you to tee off of. I love that hole, by the way. It's impossible for me to chunk a pitching wedge, at least to the point where it's, you know, the ball is completely unplayable. If you chunk one off a mat, well, you still get that, you know, that bounce contact. you can still make the ball. You can just sweep that thing along the mat. Maybe that's why I should stop hitting off of driving range mats altogether. It's grooved me into a very, very shallow attack type of golfer. Anyway, so the conditions are going to be great, but he says, I wouldn't be surprised if one of the quote-unquote locals wins this thing. So to that end, by the CBS Sports model and a computer model that they use at Sportsline, they have some of these quote-unquote local players as being among the favorites. Daily Fantasy Sports Pro Mike McClure has nailed, yes, I'm quoting, the last two majors. Wow, he's nailed the last two majors entering the weekend. Oh. Oh, it's not as impressive now. He predicted Gary Woodland's first career major championship at the U.S. Open. Okay, that's impressive. I didn't think Gary Woodland was going to win, even though he was playing well going into the weekend. But predicting Tiger Woods to win the Masters, okay, all right, using his computer model, blah, 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 blah. Here are the surprises, though. Jordan Spieth, who has won three majors, and he won the Open not 5-6 years ago, as you might think. No, it was only a couple of years ago, 2017. Jordan Spieth won the Open. He's saying he doesn't even crack the top 20 at Royal Port Rush. Wow. So that's one thing. And Jordan Spieth hasn't been playing well. Look, he blew up a little bit at the Open. He shot a 76 in the final round. He missed the cut at the Travelers. His driving accuracy is way, way down there. So he is not among the favorites. Who does he like? Rory McIlroy at 8-1. Obviously, there's your local guy. There's the local guy that that the Daily Fantasy Sports model, Mike McClure, Sportsline, blah, blah, blah. That's who they like. And again, this is the guy who picked the last two winners going into the weekend. Yeah, not on Wednesday night, so take it all with a grain of salt. Anyone else up there? Well, in terms of the likely suspects, Brooks Koepka is at 10-1. Dustin Johnson is at 12-1. I always like Dustin going into these majors, even though he's only won one of them. But just with his length off the tee and his overall game, I think, you know, he's someone you have to always consider. Tiger Woods is at 16-1, which I think is a betting line and a bookie protecting themselves option as much as anything. Look, if Tiger wins, there's going to be a bunch of people betting Tiger week in and week out, regardless of how he's playing. I don't know that he's truly a 16-1 favorite. Tiger just hasn't played. He hasn't played. I don't know how you get ready for a major championship without playing more championship golf. At playing golf at a high level against the best competition in the world, and Tiger Woods has not been doing that. John Rahm is at 16-1, and the group of players at 20-1 for the British Open are Justin Rose, Francesco Molinari, and Xander Schauffele. Once you get down to 25-1, there's still a lot of players in there that I'd like, and even beyond there, including Ricky Fowler and Tommy Fleetwood. I think Tommy Fleetwood is a great option, great guy to pick to win this thing. So that might be your best value pick in there. I'll leave this to the bankroll boys in terms of who they like and, you know, where your best value picks are. But not surprising, after what we heard from Mike McClure there and where it's being played, and after listening to David Faraday, that Rory McIlroy is your favorite going into next week's British Open at 8-1. One player who will not be there, gentleman by the name of John Daly. We'll find out a little bit more about that and why he won't be playing. If you haven't heard, I'll tell you why. John Daly, who, of course, won the British Open many, many years ago. He's still a fan favorite, still adored by many fans. Many fans on both sides of the ocean. I'll tell you why he's not going to be there. And continue on this morning. By the way, I mentioned the Dell Technologies Championship earlier and the Deutsche Bank, which, of course, will not be contested here in the Boston area this year as the PGA Tour schedule has changed. As a matter of fact, there are only three events now in the FedEx Cup playoffs. But it will be back next year, and it will be known as the Northern Trust. And the tournament director for the Northern Trust, a guy by the name of Rich Brady, will join us a little bit later here on the show. But coming up next, we'll talk about John Daly and why he's missing the British Open next here on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club. Now, here's your host, Hardy.
John Daly will not be participating at the Open Championship once again because he is not able to take a cart. I really don't want to do this every week, but Daly is kind of forcing our hand on this. It's kind of like our version of the, will Gronkowski play next year for golf? John Daly, is he going to be able to play this week? Nope, they won't let him use a cart. Daly's manager said Tuesday that he will likely play at the Barbasol Championship in Kentucky because of his right knee, he's already been granted a cart to use in that PGA Tour event. So not the event that everybody wants to play in and all the top players in the world will be playing in at Royal Portrush. No, instead he'll be in Kentucky at the Barbasol Championship. The chief tournaments and competition officer for the PGA Tour said that Daly last year was approved to use the cart at PGA Tour events and PGA Tour Champions events that require walking. Some of the Champions Tour events, they take carts anyway, but even the ones where they walk, he can play in those. So Daly hasn't played a regular PGA Tour event since going back to the Greenbrier last summer. And then, just to make it all official, the RNA announced on Tuesday of last week that Daly had withdrawn, quote, due to a medical condition. So Daly had something to say about this. He won a British Open. He won a PGA Championship. He's still a guy that everybody loves to go out and see. And I love John Daly. I've been watching him for years, it's certainly more fun when he's playing. But in order to play, I still believe that you have to be able to walk the course. Not for you and I to go out later today if you want to take a card, of course. But, this is still something bordering on a physical activity, golf, okay? I'm not going to try and make the argument that golfers are athletes. If there are athletes out there on the golf course, and there are a lot of them, it is not by virtue of the fact that they alone play golf. It's still, though, a sport. You want to call it an activity? Fine. An activity, you have to be active. There is a certain amount of physical exertion that is required to participate in this thing of golf. And one of the things that is required of many tournaments, of many levels, is that you have to walk the course. And it takes a lot out of you. Everyone says, oh, what's the big deal? Well, many of us who play the game, it will come off a course after playing 18 holes where it's either been hot or, wow, it was really rough out there today. And you feel, like, oh, you've actually done something with your day. And that's with riding in a cart. You just kind of take it for granted. And a lot of people just kind of dismiss it as not being, oh, that big of a deal. I challenge everybody who says that to go out and walk 18 holes for 5 straight days. Put in a practice round, even play a little bit on Tuesday, then go walk 18 holes on Thursday, walk 18 holes on Friday. Doesn't matter that you've got a caddy. Walk 18 on Saturday, walk 18 on Sunday, and tell me you don't feel it at least a little bit. Okay? So it is part of the game. It is something that takes away from other players, even the tiniest little bit. Ask Fred Couples how he thinks he would have played throughout the years if he didn't have to walk those hills at Augusta, coming to the back nine on Saturday, and then by Sunday, his back and his legs and everything were just gone. I know that all too well from having Fred Couples down a $20 bet down on Couples at 80-1 to win the Masters. Well, what was it, about 13 years ago now, where he was in the final pairing on Sunday, but he just gave out as a 50-something-year-old. He just, he was done. He didn't have anything left in the tank. And once again, they're not running marathons. These guys aren't Alex Honnold climbing up the face of El Capitan. It's not that type of physical exertion, but it is still physical exertion to some extent. And if you can't do it, then you can't do it. I don't even, you know, I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry. That there's, you know, some things in life that you just can't, if you're unable to do it physically, well, I'm sorry, you just can't do that then. I'll make accommodations for you a million different ways to go do that thing anyway on your own or in other venues or in other aspects. I'm not saying John Daly can't play golf anymore. Of course not. Eddie's playing championship golf that weekend anyway, just not at Royal Port Rush. Just not in certain events where it's either the USGA's policy or the RNA's policy or anyone's policy. I would not fault the PGA of America if they said, no, John, if you're taking a card and everybody else has to walk, then you can't play in this event. That's just the rule. Whether it's a dumb rule or not, that's the rule. Daly said, and he got turned down. I'll just read the quote from him, his post. And it's a photo of him from years ago, you know, kissing the claret jug when he won the British Open. Just got word the RNA turned down my application to use a card at the 2019 Open Championship. Quite disappointed. They do not see it the same way our PGA of America and PGA Tour sees it. Different continents, different laws, question marks. As a proud Open champion, I know what the Open Championship represents and what a special tournament it is. I believe all who have earned the right to compete should be afforded the right to compete and give it their best shot. Let me interject. You do have the right to compete, John. You can compete in the Open Championship until you're 60 years old. That's the rule. You want it so you can play in that thing. It doesn't matter if your handicap is ballooned up to 35. You can still come back and play as a past champion. Part of playing means you have to walk that course. While I trust the RNA's decision was made with good intentions, I could not disagree more with their conclusions. He just visited his surgeon. He reconfirmed degenerative arthritis, grade 3-4 of my right knee. Shortly, I'll need total knee. Okay, all right. So you've got physical limitations, you know? I mean, everybody has something going on in terms of their body, you know? No one else is asking for special accommodations, you know? And there aren't a lot of great examples you can draw. This is a guy who can't walk who wants to be able to take a cart. I don't know what one would lobby for if he had a bad shoulder, you know? When Jason Day had vertigo at the U.S. Open, you know? He didn't lobby the USGA to make the world stop spinning. I don't know what you do. And again, there isn't a good analogy to draw from this. But one of the requirements for this tournament and for a lot of tournaments is that you walk the course. And you can't walk, John? Well, then you can't play. And I would like to see John Daly out there. I think it would be more fun with him playing in it. But something about John Daly's lifestyle leads me to believe that maybe he hasn't done everything he could to possibly get himself ready to go out there and walk those 18 holes for at least a couple of days, and we'll see if he makes the cut. We'll see what happens after that. I don't know. Extra 60 pounds you're carrying around, you know, the John Daly diet of Diet Cokes, Jack Daniels, and M&Ms. You know, it's tough to drum up a ton of sympathy for a guy who obviously hasn't done all he can to get himself into a better position where he would at least be able to try to go out and walk. But if, you know, to me, it is the decision of any tournament, and it is 100% within their rights to the rules that apply to everybody else. Yep, they reply to you too, whether you got sore knees or not. And it's not that he cannot walk. He can walk. It just hurts to walk. It hurt, and Tiger Woods said it himself. Yeah, it hurt him to walk during the 2008 U.S. Open, when he had to go an extra round in the playoff against Rocco Mediate on literally a broken leg, and he shut it down for the rest of the year after that so he could go have surgery and go fix it. Do you think it hurt Tiger walking around for those rounds in 2008? Of course it did. It had to have been excruciating. But that's what is required of the guys who want to play in these tournaments. Daly also said he got bit by a spider. What? Oh, yeah. This was posted the day after his statement about, the day after he posted his statement about not being able to play in the British. he put up a post, and he, John Daly, might be the last guy on earth to use this site called Twitlonger, where you put out a tweet, but you go over the number of characters. I don't think this even goes over the number of characters anymore, since they expanded it to 280. Or you can get all this information out there with multiple. It's got ads. It's sponsored. Whatever. All right, make your money, John. He said, was in England last week and incurred a spider bite, not really knowing it. Fast forward to Friday, mouth to mouth compressions, and unknowingly now in an ambulance rush to ER, all while family vacation and straight into surgery. Removing what developed into a major infection in my abdominal area and treated for early sepsis, all from a brown recluse. So in addition to having the bad knees and not being able to play in the British, he got bit by a brown recluse. I guess that's bad. I don't know. It's the one spider name that, you know, everyone seems to be afraid of more so than the Black Widows. You don't want to get chomped by a brown recluse. Ah, Black Widow, no big whoop, brown recluse. Now you're in for it. One final note here before we step aside and talk with Northern Trust Tournament Director Rich Brady. The Women's Open has raised their prize money to $4.5 million. This, of course, is a timely news item due to what's been going on with the Women's World Cup and the fact that they would like to be paid more. And I think this is a move in the right direction where organizer for the Royal and Ancient at St. Andrews, 40% rise in the prize money for the Women's British Open. Still a lot less than the men. The winner's going to get a check for $675,000. Whatever player wins on the male side is going to win closer to $2 million at Portrush next week. The women play the week after that. But the men's money has also gone up, so money is going up across the board. And once again, you could make a much stronger case for the U.S. women's soccer team that they draw more attention, and as a team have more success than the men. I don't know that you can make anywhere near the case for the Women's British Open having the same type of draw as the men and what type of money it brings in. But you're still talking about finding the best player in the world on that course at that time. And I'm happy to see the prize money increasing to, as I said, almost $700,000, almost $2 million for the men. So they're still way behind, but if they're increasing across the board, if you're increasing for the men, increase it for the women too. So that's a step in the right direction. All right, we'll get the headlines here. We'll come back. We'll talk with Rich Brady. He's the tournament director for the Northern Trust, which will be returning to Boston next year. That is coming up next here on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Golf Club on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Now, here's Hardy.
All right, back on the Sports Hub Golf Club with a gentleman we spoke to several times last year, Rich Brady, who was at the time the tournament director of the Dell Technologies Championship. He is now tournament director for the Northern Trust, which will return to Boston. This is going to get confusing for some people, Rich. The Northern Trust in Boston next year. I say return, but it's really not. So, Rich, help everybody make heads or tails of this, because we're still trying to wrap our heads around this new PGA Tour schedule.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's great to chat with you. Good news is that the region has the next year to learn dates for when we come back in 2020. It's going to be August 12th through the 16th. We are now the first event of only three FedEx Cup playoff events. So off Labor Day weekend for the first time in 16 years, and have a traditional Thursday through Sunday tournament, but going to be much bigger in stature than what it has been in the past, and we're really looking forward to it. We've been planning it already for a year, and we'll have a whole other year to go to get it ready.
So as this was laid out to us last year, and we're going to get into the schedule change a little bit, but because of the FedEx Cup going to a three-event format, somebody was going to be left out in the cold. And for this year, it was the Labor Day tournament here in Boston, the Dell Technologies Championship. The Northern Trust this year will be contested at a totally different course.
That's correct, yeah. So the Northern Trust will be at Liberty National Golf Course outside of Manhattan in Jersey City.
Now, forgive me for a second, Rich. What was the Northern Trust held there before?
Correct, yes. This will be the third year that the Northern Trust will be held in the New York metropolitan area. It's rotated a few courses over the years, but okay. The way that the schedule previously laid out was there were four playoff events. The first was in New York, the second was in Boston, the third in the Midwest, and the fourth was down in Atlanta.
And it just so happened that it was always at the same course in Boston, and I think always at the same course in Atlanta.
Correct. Yeah, you got that 100% right. What we did was looked at the schedule as a whole and said, we have a real opportunity to stage our playoff events, our biggest events, in the month of August and own the month. We want the PGA Tour to be as synonymous with August as college basketball is with March or baseball is with October. And in order to do that, we really had to shuffle the schedule around. So moved some of the majors. The PGA was contested in May for the first time this year. Moved some of the other bigger events, the World Golf Championships. And we've come to a schedule that we're playing out for the very first time this year that we're seeing a lot of favorable results. And fans are going to be prepared for 2020 by the time we finish this first cycle through.
Now, I don't want to jump ahead too much, but are there any plans after next year for this rotation to continue so that in 21 it'll be back in the New York area and then in 2022 back in Boston?
Yeah, we're still going to be discussing with Northern Trust the long-term plans. What we recognize is that through this rotation, the tournament's able to be in two major metropolitan areas with the best sports fans. So New York one year and Boston for the next. We like the rotation where it's at now, and we'll certainly have conversations about continuing it in the future after 2020.
I always liked the Labor Day weekend thing. It just became part of my, you know, end of summer routine after being out at the Deutsche Bank and then the Dell Technologies Championship year after year. But I imagine at the end of the day, when you really looked at the numbers, that Labor Day weekend format probably, you could argue, ended up hurting as much as it helped you in terms of attendance because people have other stuff going on Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, I think that's really fair. If you have a house in the Cape or Nantucket or Martha's Vineyard and the last weekend of the summer, you're probably going down there to close up shop and have one last long weekend. Or if you're sending your kids back to school, have to move them into college, it's a busy weekend and a lot of people were out of town. So the move to a traditional weekend is really favorable so far. We're seeing a lot of interest from different companies in the area that are going to host clients for the first time because their clients are in town. We're going to see an increase in our volunteers that are going to be able to come out and experience the tournament. So it was really nice to have that long 3-day weekend and great for television. And I think our fans embraced it, but they're really going to like the new weekend and the new date on the calendar next year.
Well, let me ask you this, and by the way, this is Rich Brady. He's tournament director for the Northern Trust. It'll return to Boston a year from August. So, Rich, the PGA Tour changed their schedule, and look, you're selling it great. You want to own the month of August in the PGA Tour, fine. I know that it has as much to do with not wanting to compete against college football and the NFL, and you don't want to bleed into September, and whether you're in a position to say that or not is fine. I just wonder how the rest of the schedule change has been received. You know, you talk about how people are excited to have a golf tournament in Boston in the month of August. But in terms of the other changes, like the PGA moving to May and the Players Championship moving to before the Masters, how is the rest of that shaken out? What's the response been like?
Yeah, I think the overall the schedule change is going to be really positive. And you're correct that if we don't have to compete against the NFL for television viewership in September, then that could be a good thing. And that gives us the chance to host these bigger events in August, and we firmly believe that. As far as the rest of the schedule is concerned, the move to March for the players, the team down there had a 10-month window to turn that event around from May to March, did an unbelievable job. The event is as big as it always has been. Rory McIlroy won, got the year off to a really good start, followed by Tiger winning in April, and then the PGA in May with Brooks Koepka winning. I know that the event organizers there were really happy with how everything turned out and the crowds that they got in New York as golf season got started. So really positive all in all so far. And shoot, only a couple more weeks to go until we get the playoffs going.
Now, Rich, for the FedEx Cup point standings, I heard rumor of this last year, and I haven't checked up on it lately, but has the format changed so that the winner of the final tournament will win the FedEx Cup?
You got that 100% right. So it's going to be handicapped going into the final tournament, which means that whatever player has the most points after the BMW Championship this year will start at 10 strokes better than the last player in the field. And it's tiered from there. So say they start at 10 under, the second place players at 8 under, so on and so forth, down to even par for the 30th. What that guarantees is whomever wins that tournament wins the Tour Championship, also go win the FedEx Cup because they came back from maybe a deficit or they didn't. They started at 10 under and they were able to hold on to that lead and win the entire the FedEx Cup. So that is definitely a new wrinkle. New change for viewership, but it's going to make it so easy for the television viewer to understand what exactly the implications are when that player wins the Tour Championship.
Okay, I'm glad you guys are continuing to think about it and tweak it a little bit, and you're not just saying, nope, this is the way it is, and that's the way it's going to be, because I think it did need some fixing over the years, but sounds like it's being addressed, and more than anything, I'm looking forward to having the tournament back in Boston. What are the dates again for next August, Rich?
So we will be back. Schedule's coming out in a couple weeks here in the tour, but it's August 12th through the 16th is when the dates they should circle on their calendar and let's come back out.
Sounds good. Rich Brady, Tournament Director, Northern Trust, returning to Boston a year from August. See, I'm so excited. I want to push it up like almost a full year, but we can't do that. So instead, Rich, I'm sure we'll talk to you again before then, but we'll definitely see you when the tournament returns to Boston next year.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Hardy. Great chatting as always.
Getting you ready to hit the links. It's the Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, back to wrap things up here in the Sports Hub Golf Club. I had a whole thing that I wanted to get to today based on David Segui and the comments he made that Beadle and I went over in detail yesterday about drug use in Major League Baseball and how it applies to golf, not only on the PGA Tour but on the Champions Tour and recreationally. And maybe drugs is the wrong word because most of it was going to be focused on the use of CBD. But you know what? I'm going to save that probably for even like a couple weeks from now. Next week we're going to be talking a lot of British Open, but maybe a more comprehensive look at the use of let's call them what they are, performance enhancers, legal and otherwise, in golf, which seems like a silly thing, but it's been going on for years in terms of different medications and what I have found already and what we will learn together about the use of certain medications, we'll call them, I think will absolutely floor you when we get to the numbers of guys out there using not just the guys who have embraced CBD, cannabis products, but the number of guys who have already gone to their doctor and say, hey, I've got ADHD, right? I need Adderall, right? It's going to the numbers are astounding. So we'll do that in a couple weeks. But I would like to speak with Joe Murray and Mike Flynn here about something that I know Mike Flynn especially is excited about, and that is celebrities, because, you know, he is a movie watcher, maybe even more so than I am. Is that fair to say, Mike?
I think Mike's a big movie watcher, Hardy.
Oh, he's not there.
Sorry,
no,
Hardy.
Both here. Joe, I need to actually ask you something, too.
Okay.
Looking at the odds for the British Open, are you gonna do any suggestions, fade or follow type of things for the British Open next week?
Yes, we'll have a pick for the podcast, but I heard you going through the favorites and the odds, and Rory is interesting to me at 8-1. Brooks Koepka, 10-1. This is what I see now. And Dustin Johnson, the Tiger Woods thing, I totally agree with you. Like, the fact that he hasn't really played competitive golf, I would not even waste a bet on that. But, You know,
but they have to. They have to cover themselves.
That's true, yeah. And again, they're going to get that bet. So you're absolutely right. Oh, yeah. You're absolutely right on that end. But
the one that I like in there is Tommy Fleetwood at 25-1.
You literally just stole my thunder.
I like it too.
25.
I like it too.
That was looking right in that gap, you know, right in that 20 to 30 to 1 gap. But yeah, you mentioned Tommy Fleetwood, Jason Day, Adam Scott, Ricky Fowler, like those type of guys. I think that's where the great value is, in between 20 to 1 and 30 to 1.
I might also I might take a bit of a flyer on the mad scientist Bryson DeChambeau. I see him here at 40 to 1.
Where's Happy Gilmore on that list? How do you feel he's going to do in the British Open?
Listen, speaking of fictional characters,
yes,
and actors and whatnot, the American Century Championship is being contested this weekend in Lake Tahoe, where Tony Romo is your tournament leader. This is ooh, like a celebrity event. This is the one that you can watch on NBC Sports. He shot a 70 in round one, but they also use the Stableford scoring system, so you get points, you know, like a point for a par, 2 points for a birdie, you know, stuff like that. So in just pure strokes, he is tied for the lead with Derek Lowe, who also shot a 70. But Romo's playing off of a handicap that's obviously higher than Derek Lowe's or something. I don't know how it works. Or he made more birdies than Lowe. Well, however it works, I guess for Stableford it doesn't even matter that much. Some of the guys who are playing in this and still playing well, and this is the one I couldn't wait to tell Flynn about, Jack Wagner. You remember Jack Wagner, Flynn?
Yes, the wasn't he a soap opera guy?
Soap opera guy.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
How old is Jack Wagner these days? Who, by the way, shot a 72.
Well, I mean, right in the 80s is when he started kicking around, right? Even if he was 25 then.
He is 59 years old.
That's
it? Looked it up. Yeah,
I bet you he looks great too, Hardy.
I'm sure he
does.
You
know he does.
What do you think? I'll just out of the 100 guys that are listed here, I'll just give you a name and you tell me where he falls in the order. Is he, you know, is he in the top 20? Is he 50th? Whatever.
Okay.
I'll throw a few at you right now. Ray Romano.
Ray Romano. I would say he's middle of the pack.
He is tied for 87th. He shot 101.
Ooh, worse than I thought. I thought he'd be better than that. He's pretty long. And TV guys, what do they got to do?
Well, not only that, but he did that whole Hank Haney project, and
that's
he
right.
Seemed to have some kind of 101 for Ray Romano. All right, this one's a shocker. Charles Barkley.
He's got to be 28th.
Barkley has got a horrible swing.
I thought.
Yeah. Well, he shot a 94.
That's not bad for him.
He's in there at 76. You want? How about some football players? Golden Tate.
I think he played pretty well. Receivers, quarterbacks. How many are there? 100?
Yeah.
I think he breaks the top 60.
He is tied for 60th.
Oh, nice.
Wow. You.
Good.
Tyler Seguin, better or worse than Golden Tate?
I'm going to say better.
Oh, you were going to say worse. He's tied for 63rd. He shot a 90 also, but not as many Stableford points. All right, so I think that's going to be televised over the weekend. I think these are fun to watch. I mean, Justin Timberlake is out there breaking 80. That guy is unbelievable. So, and Jerry Rice is still playing really, really good golf. You know, you get a
chance. So there any other NFL quarterbacks kicking around the top 20, 25 or something like that, or no? Just Romo?
I don't see any other quarterbacks here. And again, Steve Young is out there playing, but not particularly well. Jim McMahon shot an 86. He's tied for 49.
Does he wear shoes? He must. Is he obligated to run that course or not?
No shoes, but what did he wear? The gargoyles? Was he a gargoyle or an Oakley Blades guy?
The most outrageous would be his choice, I'm sure.
Exactly. So, anyway, that'll be going on this weekend. What do you gentlemen have coming up this morning?
Red Sox won a big one last night. So, I will start there. We get some thoughts on the NBA. I am sure Mike Flynn very interested in what's happening there. And some football news out there as well, as we're here until 11.
All right. Oh, Carson Palmer tied for 6. He shot a
72.
Okay,
that makes sense. Wow. There
you go.
Well, he should have a good, right? He's probably every bit of 6'5 and change.
Oh, here's a guy that you know. What did Trent Dilfer shoot?
Oof. He's a big golfer.
Yeah.
I would say he would be what did Carson Palmer shoot?
Carson Palmer shot a 72 in the first round.
All right, I'd go 79. 78-ish.
Let me tell you something. You need to start handicapping the what the hell is this? The American Century Championship. Trent Dilfer shot a 77.
Perfect. Yeah, well, I figured, you know, Palmer has the length.
Yeah. Well,
look at that.
I think that's it.
The Flynn and Hardy golf podcast.
Well,
one guy that knows everything and nobody the guy that knows nothing. It's a perfect combo.
And that's right. And it just shows that the guy who, you know, allegedly knows nothing knows just as much, if not more, than the guy who's supposed to know. All right, guys. Have a good show.
Thanks, buddy.
Anybody who's up on the North Shore, you want to stop by Dick's Sporting Goods today, 11 to 1 in Danvers. They're doing their big outdoor tour, and you can get in the 20x40. It's like a test pool. There, you can actually test drive a kayak or a paddleboard, and they've got a test track for bikes and for all your outdoor fun this summer. So this is the tour that's going up and down the East Coast, Dick's Sporting Goods. I'll be there 11 to 1 today in Danvers. Otherwise, we get the headlines here, and then Joe Murray, Mike Flynn coming up next here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.